Welcome to the latest episode of Apple at Work, a podcast where we talk about all things Apple in the enterprise. This week, I'm joined by Ben Toms and James Ridsdale from DataJar. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hello. How
you doing? Thank you for having us.
So you all are from DataJar. And so for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with DataJar, give us a 40,000 foot discussion of what your product does.
So it goes back to around 2013 when things like Jamf Cloud and modern management technologies weren't really a thing. It was really to provide an organization cradle to grave management of Apple devices at scale. So doesn't just stop with software. It actually, you know, it also encompasses engineering support. And, you know, you could argue it's a managed service, but actually we're very much venturing beyond that, in that we're developing new software and technologies all the time to really simplify the control and put the user at the front and enhance user experience.
Yeah, and so are there specific verticals that you all serve, or is it just really a wide range?
Anywhere where there's a high density deployment of Apple technology. So originally, way back when, it was a lot of education focus with typical lab based deployments. I guess that's when I going back to the beginning, mid of my career, I'd say. Was a large majority of what I was doing, but coming from a enterprise IT background, working for a large global publisher, we've also gone into various other verticals as well. So we range from everything from healthcare right the way through to design, production, video, all sorts.
If you go to your website, you see, you know, some information about how you all kind of work with Jamf. You know, everybody knows I'm a big fan of Jamf. Talk to us about that integration.
So looking at what we've done there, you know, when I started the business, it was very much trying to pick a very strong partner to work with. And Jamf really ticked all of those boxes. And the work we have continued to do for them and the partnership we have, aside from them being a great company to work with, we're very much aligned both in culture and indeed strategy. So for us to develop new products and new services, and we have a few coming to market over the next sort of couple of years, but the product I think we're here really to talk about today is really driven originally from our managed service platform, which is DataJar.mobi. And it's now sort of taking that forward and making it available to other organizations.
Yeah, so let's dig in there. Let's talk about the new features you guys have rolled out for specifically on the Mac side. Where did this come from?
So, yeah, as I said, we actively look after around, I'd say, about 40,000 devices globally from our platform, and we wanted a way of this goes back when my esteemed colleague Ben joined me back in 2016. He saw the way the company was doing things, and then decided to lean things out. And I'll let him elaborate a bit more in a second. But essentially, it's how can we provide a structured multi-tenanted platform leveraging Jamf's technology for multiple customers. So when you scale this up from, if you're looking after a single management environment, you could have, you know, what, a few hundred machines, 1,000 machines, whatever, but it's one environment. How do you scale that to 300, 400, 500 environments, multiple thousands of machines without having ever to log into any of those systems? So this is kind of where this technology came from. And I had a lot of original background with technology like Monkey and things like that, going back into 2010, 2009. And when Ben came in, he kind of, you know, it's always the second person perspective. It's like, why aren't we doing this? So yeah, that's kind of where this has come from. And obviously Ben's best place to go into more detail on that.
Yeah, Ben, let's kind of hear from your perspective. I do think this is a massive problem for a lot of organizations that we all know that Apple has been growing in the enterprise like weeds. And it's something that if you've been around enterprise IT for any length of time, that's a shock. Even going back, if you go back 20 years, I did some kind of math study recently. Actually, I'll ask you guys. Okay. So the iPod came out, 2001? Yeah. So do you know if on January 1st, 2002, if you had bought Apple stock instead of buying an iPod, do you know what that'd be worth today? Any guess?
I don't want to know.
Yeah, no idea.
It would be worth $500,000. So if you had invested $500, I basically had bought 23 shares. It'd be 21 shares. 21 shares of Apple. In 2002, January 1st, it would be worth $500,000. Not because I did not realize Apple had done so many stock splits over the years. They did a 7-for-1. I guess it was back in 2014. I had forgotten that. So if you do the number of shares you would now own that's actually accounting for this coming stock split where they are going 4-for-1. So that's assuming that's counting that in. But yeah, it's crazy. So getting back on the subject, just anybody that's been around IT for any length of time is kind of shocked about how Apple has grown so much. And I think it's really the Mac that's what's growing so much right now. And it really was that halo effect that everybody predicted of the C-level got the iPhone, the iPad came in, and it's I'm not a use my iPad every day sort of guy, like as a workstation, but I believe in very specialized instances, like it's the perfect device, particularly for field workers. There is no better device to me than the iPod. But then for people that work at a desk all day, the Mac has just grown by leaps and bounds. And I think, me personally, I think that's due to just a multitude of reasons. But one of the big ones is, I think, employee satisfaction, ROI on the machine, and easier to troubleshoot. If you look at studies from companies like IBM, the Macs are just less finicky to deal with. And one of the things we've seen at our organization is just the resale value is off the charts. And so you buy these devices, they're very, very durable. And then when your lease is up or the cycle's done, they're still worth quite a bit. So just knowing that, like in the US, all of the Fortune 500 companies are using some sort of Apple products, and any sort of employee choice is all about giving employees Macs. So what's kind of been that, like you guys watching the Mac grow in the enterprise?
I think for me, it was very fortunate in this landing in the time when I came into IT. I personally started working in music studios, the usual thing for a lot of us Apple admins. And then I fell into doing IT about 19 years now, I think, 18, 19 years. And most of that, I've actually been using Jamf. So it was kind of at the very beginnings of when management and stuff was becoming prolific. So for me, the time has been really fortuitous. And you mentioned the iPod. In fact, when me and my wife were looking at suits for our wedding, we found some iPod cufflinks, and she just fell about laughing. So I actually got married in iPod cufflinks, because part of the reason that we could afford to get married at the age we couldn't got the wedding that we could was because I was deemed this specialist from working with Apple. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of people around doing it. It was quite rare. So it's very fortunate for me personally to be able to come through this, but I do believe it's the stuff that you just said there. It's the halo effect, taking it from the simplicity of use. People love their eye devices. I know and now it's like, well, they love them. They want them to work in the enterprise. And that's kind of what a lot of folks like myself and James, et cetera, we've kind of built a career on, making those Apple devices work in a Windows environment.
Yeah. And this is one of our huge, success points on this is we make this stuff work. That's always been my, whenever I used to go into organizations, it used to frustrate the apps. Well, it used to really anger me, because you're in a situation where people are saying this Mac is rubbish, blah, blah, Apple are, they're just toys. And I'm like, well, this comes down to lack of understanding. This comes down to enablement. This comes down to skill sets. And part of our goal as this is to fill that gap. So as Apple's become more and more successful, they've grown and grown and grown. So have we. But we go into environments where it's literally top down, and you start at the top, and then you start working with the teams, you work with the network teams, you work with everything, you ensure success of that entire rollout, or however you want to look at that business transformation piece. And every customer that we've been involved with has grown. They have adopted, in most cases, it's gone in with almost a POC of some Apple devices. And when we're finished, it is a device choice or as a service model. So, we see this. And I think with looking at what Apple are doing, we just need to hang on their coattails and make sure these organizations are doing the right thing, putting the right stuff in, putting the right technology in, and having the right products, which is where this comes in. This is the bigger vision piece for us.
And I think we've seen this. We've seen a lot of apathy almost towards Apple technology, where there's people think it just moves too quick. They have a very traditional way of doing things, a very traditional IT way of doing things. And then we end up in the world that we are, you know, since March, and realizing that desktop support model, someone walking up to install a bit of software on a machine, those type of things have completely turned on their heads. And these are things that have kind of, Apple been banging the drum on, employee enablement, consumerization of IT, all those great things that all come as part of the Apple experience and under the correct management as well. And so that seems to really have enabled us as well and helped us work with businesses and facilitate the Apple devices working in their environment.
What kind of trends are you all seeing? I mean, I guess, let me back up. If you remember, kind of going back to the days when we had Mac OS updates every 18 months, and obviously now it's on a yearly cycle. And what sort of trends are you seeing with your customers on how they're doing the cadence of the point releases, but like the major ones? So Big Sur assumingly will be out in October at some point. Public beta is out as of they were recording this. Do you expect most of your customers to make a pretty quick upgrade, or do you suspect they'll delay for 90 days and maybe try to get it done in January?
We've generally been seeing it with folks where as soon as they buy that first bit of hardware, it will only run the new OS. That's generally when they need to move. We're trying to engage people, make them look a bit further forward on here, but it's unfortunately the old technical debt is what might hold them back. Things like 32-bit apps, things, security software that needs kernel extensions, those type of things that
always
start to conflict with it. Yes, yeah. And so that's why we're constantly reaching out to folks, liaising with their teams, and advising them of the stuff that's coming down the pike and the changes that are coming, and to make sure they can be ready for it. But unfortunately, it generally is they first get that lovely brand new bit of Apple hardware that suddenly can't do the things they need, and then that starts the ball rolling with them. Unfortunately, it's a little bit late, but at least the ball is rolling in that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you've said there, because as much as like on the consumer side, I love the frequent updates and the new features. So many of the new features aren't necessarily business impacting. And so you kind of have to ask that question of like, what am I gaining now? Cause the Apple still does issue security updates for the, when Big Sur comes out, Catalina will still receive security updates. Safari will be updated with the latest security enhancements. And so, and I think that's been one of the changes that has affected IT the most in the past 5 years or so is the speed at which security updates happen. Those aren't things you can just wait on because then your organization is vulnerable. So it's no longer possible to say, hey, we're going to stay on Windows XP for 10 years. Well, you can't do that now. Like the world doesn't allow you to do that. But it's also been easier to get updated because on the flip side, your vendors are updating more quickly to be compatible with those things. No longer are things, still tied to IE9. Now things, certainly on the web app side, it kind of has to run whatever the latest version of Chrome is, and it moves so fast that they have to keep moving. But we kind of do that same thing in our organization. I don't block, I usually will block them for 30 to 60 days. I like to try to wait until that first bug fix update comes out, like the big kind of 0.01 or 0.02. That's generally a pretty nice fix for some minor bugs. So after that, I'll kind of, I'll kind of then say, hey, you guys can upgrade if you want, but just know that, this is not going to affect you day to day. And if you can help, and if people don't, update, we'll usually try to get it towards the end of the year. end of our kind of fiscal year. We'll try to get everybody updated with the latest one. But yeah, it's generally when you get that, you know, new machine, and certainly if you do like a lease and you do a big deployment all at once, you don't have an option. It's like you've got to get your apps ready, because you can't buy a Mac with the old OS unless it's right after the new one comes out.
Yeah, and I mean, on that, I mean, I think really what's important really for folks to know and realize is the most secure Mac is actually the Mac on the latest OS. So there are the majority of software security patches are back forward a little ways, but really it's going to be the latest OS. Big Sur will contain all the releases. There's always been historically stuff that hasn't been backported. So trying to, when we're speaking to high security environments, again, it's a little fight there where we're like, we need you folks on the latest version of Mac OS, but then their security software holds them back. But the other thing with this as well is the third-party software. So if it comes through VPP from Apple, well, then your MDM can keep that updated. But really, majority of software folks use isn't available on the App Store. Case in point would be your Adobe apps, as an example. And so with them, it's what do you do with those? And that's why we built out this auto-update framework so that we could keep those third-party applications up to date for people, and keep them up to date and in a secure manner. And in which case, we're also securing the OS as well by making sure that any of those third-party apps that do have vulnerabilities are then patched in a timely manner and updated in the correct way. And it's trying to make sure we've got a great user experience built in, and we can also make sure that the devices are up to a level as soon as possible, really. And that was an interesting challenge that we set ourselves way back when. Me and James were discussing this, and that's what's grown and grown and grown, and now it's turned into our auto update for Jamf product.
Yeah, I firmly agree with you, and that's kind of been in discussion in the news recently when Apple purchased Fleetsmith and canned their app catalog, and it was a very, very popular feature. But because I love the App Store, and obviously on iOS, all the apps come to the App Store, but on the Mac, the majority of business apps you use are not available in the App Store, and it's generally due to Apple's sandboxing. And so I can think of like the at any given organization today, the apps are getting installed are probably Chrome, depending on what kind of organization it is. The Adobe suite for organizations that use that, the Microsoft suite. Now, again, that is available through the App Store, but I can imagine there's a lot of organizations that use the direct download from Microsoft, and then to Zoom. And these things are, you really want to, from an IT perspective, to know that these products are always on the latest version. Particularly, Office can easily have security vulnerabilities through macros in Excel and things like that. And obviously Zoom, you know what kind of track record it had this year. It was updating almost every day with new security updates. So no, it's a need, and it's a problem that you kind of wish Apple would fix in a way. Because the App Store is so great, but there's just not a reason for so many of these enterprise apps to be in there, because they can't. And it's not worth the technical debt to make them compatible. So I don't know. It's a great product, and it's awesome to see you guys have it. You see this need, and it's a needed thing to do to make sure that these apps are up to date. Because really, apps are now just windows into other network services, and they've just got to stay up to date. They've got to be up to date with the latest security problem. So it's awesome. I think it's a great product. It's awesome that you guys had the idea, and it's awesome to see it implemented so well. One final question before we wrap up. You all have some integration with Okta. Talk to me about that kind of integration. What do you guys do there?
We do a lot with using Jamf Connect, and it's really the bigger piece. Again, with our auto update service, there's all of the feeds and stuff. Things like Jamf Connect and Okta are already in there. We tend to work with customers on building out their mobile, their SaaS integration part, so all the external services, Zoom or their CRM, they could be using Salesforce, whatever. But we kind of, again, try and zoom back a little bit and look just beyond device management, but then we bring in this industry-leading technology such as Okta. Essentially, where we're at the moment, we're getting new employees joining. We set them up in our HR system. The HR system then provisions the user account into Okta. Okta then provisions the user account into all the ancillary services, so it provisions them, so the correct licensing is assigned, everything else. It could be RingCentral, it could be, I don't know, CRM access, Zendesk, whatever it might be. And you drop ship the machine from Apple to their house, and they turn it on, and then they go through the setup. So zero IT is where we want to be. We do this already internally, and we're slowly working with our customer base as well, and taking them through. Because this, everyone was overnight essentially deemed a remote worker with this global pandemic, and us having that technology already in place, we have seen zero impact to our business, apart from growth, where other companies are going, can we have what you've got, please? Because that seems to work really well.
I think identity management is something that is just so important going forward for companies, because everything is a new cloud service, and you know, it's not just about connecting your sales app to your marketing app. It's an HR function, and we talked about it in the previous podcast where really identity has been an IT problem. Or IT's had to come up with solutions, but it's really an HR problem. And that's really something that the human resources department should own identity, because it all starts with the employee onboarding, and everything should stem from that.
Yeah. And you want to make sure the right level of access is permitted to those systems as well. I mean, I remember working, back in the early 2000s, working in an IT department, I'd get an email from HR with a new user to set up. And you'd go through and you'd say, well, they're in this system. Well, I'll just set them up. I'll take a guess that they need to be an administrator or a power user within that particular system, because you weren't told what level of access. But using technology like Okta, you can define all that, so it's policy-based. And it makes it incredibly powerful, and especially if you're offboarding people as well, because that can also happen during a pandemic. You can make sure your doors are shut. So yeah, it's really interesting to be involved in all this at the moment.
Well, I think in the Apple space, we're looking at the management of the devices is, MDM is a need now. It's not just a want or something. You have to have MDM, but there's a lot more that you have to do outside of that. And I think as admins, we're looking at this more and more now. What's the other bits? The identity management is important. What about applications that aren't available on the App Store? And these things start to really happen. DLP. Malware protection, these are all the other things that we're starting to, we've got products in now. And that's because there's a need and there's a want there. But it's the whole ecosystem has kind of massively expanded now that everybody's realized, well, you have to have MDM, but actually MDM isn't the be all and end all. There's also all this other stuff that you have to bring in as well.
Yeah, I agree there. And it's about, and I've always said, like, my job is not but fixing broken things. And that's what a lot of people think IT is like, okay, my computer doesn't work and I need it fixed. I feel like the job of a modern IT department is to design the systems that connect all these things, where yes, I don't manage our payroll system, but yet I'm the one that has, works and can figure out how to integrate the payroll system with Okta, which then funnels to these other things. It's about being connectors of services. And no, it's not. It's different than IT, but it's still a skill set. It's still something. I wouldn't say you'd have to go to school for it, because honestly, you need the basics of IT, but like that, things change so much. But it's being able to understand from a high level of like how your organization's things and services fit and talk to each other. That's a skill, and that's a marketable skill.
Yeah, and that's a saying that I've had. I've said for years, and James has ascribed to. Me and James met each other years and years ago. We've always had the same mindset, but good IT is not seen. That's the thing that people love about Apple products. You don't have to think about what you're doing with them. It's normally really intuitive. And going forward to what you were saying there with payroll systems and that, all the magic happens in the background, right? It shouldn't be in your face that someone has had to do something. Someone's made to make this work. So good IT is not seen. It should just allow people to work. And to go about their business without interrupting. And that's what we're going to with this. And that's why there's all these other bits that have to come in order to facilitate that.
Yeah, I think it's been a fascinating discussion. It's more kind of like the future of system administrators is system integrators. So guys, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for talking to us and talking to us about DataJar. We'll have a link to your website in the show notes. So if anybody's listening, wants to learn more about some of the solutions you guys offer, just check the show notes. We'll have a link there. If you're new to the show or listening on the web, you enjoy the show, we'd appreciate it if you go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star, or you know, even a 4-star. I'll take a 4-star. It's Friday here recording, so I'll take anything I can get. Just kidding. Or an Overcast, just hit this star button. That helps new people find the show. Guys, thanks for coming on. We just appreciate taking the time to help us learn more about kind of what you guys do and the solutions you all offer. So if your listeners are struggling with updating Mac apps, you definitely want to check out DataJar. They have a great solution. So everybody, have a great week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. We almost